Welcome to Bossy, Brilliant, and Badass, a weekly conversation about business, careers, and personal development designed to inspire, educate, and motivate you.
And sometimes ourselves.
To show up powerfully, live fearlessly, and to find and unleash your inner badass. I'm Lisa Lindsay.
I'm Liz Green.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to Bossy, Brilliant, and Badass. So today we're going to talk about brand positioning for the entrepreneur, and we have a special guest, and her name is Kristen Harper. She is the founder of Driven to Succeed, LLC, a minority-owned leadership development company that provides brand strategy, consulting, and market research. And she has led teams to develop strategies, product innovation, and brand building marketing to increase sales, profit, and market share for brands, including Crest, Oral-B, and Hershey's Kisses, my personal favorite. And she is the author of The Heart of the Leader, 52 Emotional Intelligence Insights to Advance Your Career. And this is really cool. It became a number one new release on Amazon in the first 48 hours, Lisa.
Wow. That's very cool. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. So Thank you, Kristen.
Welcome. Thank you. So excited to be here with both of you, Lisa and Liz.
Oh, thank you. So, I mean, this is so much to cover. And I know, Kristen, you can talk for hours on all this stuff. So I want to just kind of jump right in here and talk about brand positioning. And the first question I have for you is, what is the secret to great brand positioning, in your opinion?
Yeah, in my opinion, the secret to great brand positioning is customer intimacy. That means going beyond demographics of gender, of age, of geography. It gets into the psychographics of understanding motivations, of understanding lifestyle, understanding fears, understanding uncertainties, understanding what delights your consumer or your customer. And the only way you can do that is through being deeply intimate with your consumer or your customer. And I find that that happens best through conversation. And so we could talk a little bit later on, because there's a difference between quantitative and qualitative research. Mm-hmm. Quantitative is really the analytics, and we are bombarded with so many analytics, so many data points, especially as we've moved to a very digital society. Analytics tells a portion of the story, but qualitative research, where you can talk directly to your consumer or your customer or your target audience, you will build so much deeper insights, empathy, and intimacy. So that, I believe, is the secret to great brand positioning.
And so a brand is just starting out, right? And this entrepreneur is like, oh, I have this great idea, and I've done A, B, C, D. And now I'm a little bit confused as to how to position my brand. And I know you just talked a lot about some of these other points to, you know, really deeply know your customer, their lifestyle, and whatnot. What is something or a couple of things that kind of on a concrete level that new business owners can hone in on?
Yeah, the biggest thing new business owners need to hone in on even before you launch your business is understanding the unmet needs of your target audience. Meaning, what are their pain points? What are their challenges? What are the things that they struggle with most? Because consumers and customers hire you to solve a problem. So you have to be able to deeply understand that problem and why it's such a problem for them, and then solve the problem. And then once you've solved the problem and you validated that you've solved the problem from their perspective and not just from your perspective, because that's easy to do as a business owner. We get enamored with our own brilliance. And certainly as an entrepreneur, there's so much brilliance and so much risk taking and, you know, so much courage that entrepreneurs have. But it's really, really important to hear it directly from your customers. And so the most important thing is to understand their pain points and discover that unmet need. And once you've solve their pain points, then you want to communicate it in a way that they understand and they will move into action to, first of all, consider what you have to offer, but ultimately purchase.
So can we talk a little bit more about that, understanding their pain points and communicating it specifically? Because I think that's a place where we all sort of maybe fall into a trap. And like you said, getting enamored with our own brilliance, which, by the way, we value brilliance around here at Bossy Brilliant Badass. Just want to say that.
Absolutely.
Yes. but can we talk about that, right? Because I think when you're a service provider or even a product provider, right, it springs from an idea of how you can solve a problem. And there's a way that me, Lisa, as an HR consultant, would solve a problem. And since Liz has a product business, there's an idea that Liz had as to develop a product that she thought would solve a need, right? Mm-hmm. But how do we know that a client wants it, right? And how then do we communicate that to them? Because I think that that's where the disconnect is, what we think they want versus what they actually think they want and need.
Absolutely. And generally, your customers or prospective customers won't be able to tell you with precise accuracy what they even think they want or need.
Correct. So
it's up to you, and I would say really to employ the services of someone who is skilled in market research. And that's one of the services that my company provides, is market research, because it is both an art and a science. And the difficult thing about being an entrepreneur is that sometimes it's difficult. There's a little bit of pride of ownership, and it can be difficult to hear constructive comments or criticisms about our brilliant idea. So I think that bringing in someone who is skilled in market research can help you. But here are some of the things that I would say specifically. One is to ask, you start with asking open-ended questions, and doing a deep amount of listening. And I have a very prescriptive way in my course, the Brand Positioning Blueprint Bootcamp. I have a very prescriptive way that current or aspiring entrepreneurs can facilitate either a one-on-one interview or a focus group discussion. So questions include things like, you know, tell me about your current situation. You know, what problem are you trying to solve? How do these challenges affect your life? What do you really want? So that gets to what their needs and the desires and, you know, why is this so important to you? That gets to the motivation. Then, you know, currently people are solving a problem in some kind of way. So the second step is really to deeply understand the competitive set. So what have you tried so far to solve the problem? You know, what's working, what's not working, et cetera. So once you deeply understand your target audience, and then you deeply understand your competitive set, you take all of that data, combine all of that qualitative data, combine with any quantitative data you have, and that's where your brilliance can really shine through, because you can pinpoint, hey, here are the pain points they talked about, here's why that's so important to them, and here's a solution I have that can solve that. Then the next step, and this is something that I teach as well, but that I have done professionally for 20 years, leading global iconic brands like Crest, Oral-B, Hershey's Kisses, which again, that's my favorite too, has been Hershey's Kisses. So I wish we were in person, I'd give you some chocolate. But there's a very specific way that you write a product or service concept, because you won't be there generally as an entrepreneur to sell your product or service. And even if you are having that conversation with your prospective buyer, they're going to do other investigation and research on their own. And so there are very specific ways that you need to communicate concisely what your product or service offers and how it solves their unmet needs.
Right. So I don't know if you've listened to other episodes, but I tend to be the very practical one and I want like very concrete examples. So I tend to throw myself up as a guinea pig. Yeah. So let's say you have this HR consulting business.
Mm-hmm. Let's say.
Let's go. Hey, you want some free consulting. Let's go.
And you want some free consulting. No, but in all seriousness, let's say you have this HR consulting business, right? And HR is a very specific thing. And I know what I hear from clients. And the other thing is, I know what I've seen when I've worked within organizations as well as worked with other clients. Now, there can be two very different levels of what, you know, higher end where we're thinking about culture and more strategic things, and then your lower end where we're thinking about compliance, right? So let's just focus on clients who are concerned about compliance. A lot of them talk about being able to sleep at night. Right. And they use some version of that language when I'm talking to them. So then how do I then take that to position my brand? Let's say take that language to then turn it around to position my brand.
Absolutely. So I have a very prescriptive way of concept writing. It starts with the insight. So, for example, in that example where your target audience is an HR practitioner who's focused on compliance, you start with the insight. So it might sound something like compliance is an area, and this is going to, this certainly isn't going to be perfect, but, you know, is compliance keeping you up at night? Mm-hmm. Introducing, and then you talk about your product and service.
Right.
Then you talk about why they should believe you can deliver against those promises. So, you know, the antithesis of staying up at night and being kept up at night because of some type of worry is assurance. So how will you reassure them around compliance? What are the things that will put their minds and their hearts at ease? And who said that you have done that? You know, what's the additional proof? Maybe there's social proof. Maybe there is a repeat client rate. Maybe there are, you know, different types of clients that you mention, et cetera. So that's a method that I use to start with the insight first, then move into the promise of what you'll deliver. And then what's the proof that you can deliver it?
So it's sort of something like, let me repeat that in a slightly different way. Is compliance keeping you up at night? That's the insight. And then the assurance is, don't worry, I got you covered. I can handle this, for lack of a better way to say it. And here's why, because I've got 20 years of experience as an HR professional. I have tools and resources and systems that gets me insight to the law. I have repeat clients that have done a bunch of audits and had good outcomes for. Right.
Yes.
Things like that.
Yes. Got it. And the one pivot I would say is, instead of focusing on you as the promise and the practitioner, I would focus on what is the system that will produce the outcome.
So the audit.
Yeah.
What's the audit? Yeah.
And then you become part of that proof in that third paragraph.
Interesting. All right, cool.
Yeah. And you could even elaborate more on, you know, what may be keeping them up at night. I think that's a really great example, Lisa, because it's important to incorporate emotions into concept writing. It's important to incorporate emotions into marketing, because there are certainly functional attributes that matter, but the emotions are what will move people to act.
So tell me more about that, because I hear that all the time, right? That emotion is the thing that matters. And I don't know. It's kind of foreign to me, because I don't necessarily know. I can be an emotional buyer, but it's very rare. I'm the type of person who very much thinks about what I'm going to buy, why I need it, how much it costs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
let's keep going with your example. So. Sure. Let's talk about the HR leader who is, you know, they are kept up at night because they're worried about compliance. Mm-hmm. Why are they worried? And what will happen? What's likely to happen if they don't intervene? So you tell me that.
Okay, sure. So they're worried because they think things are not, they're not doing things correctly, right? And the big concern is Big Brother, really. It's the law. It's the possibility of a lawsuit or the risk of fines for doing things incorrectly that come from the government, because we all know, catch you doing it wrong, the government's going to fine you or an employee can sue you.
Got it. Okay. So, and what would happen if they get sued? What would happen if they're fined? Then what?
Well, it gets expensive real quick, right? Mm-hmm. If you're sued, an employee sues you, and let's say it's a wage and hour lawsuit, for example, then that becomes very
stressful.
Expensive. Well, yeah, stressful, but it becomes very expensive. And that's often, when we're talking about smaller businesses, that's often money they don't have to spend, right?
Yep.
If I ever want to be mean and scare somebody to death, I tell them about my former employer who got sued. Part of the reason why they hired me was because they had gotten sued for a wage and hour claim. And in order to get out of it, it cost them $900,000.
Wow.
And 2 years, whoa, by the way, wow. to get out of it. Yeah. And I mean, people hear those numbers and they go, what? And they were like, yeah, they actually thought they were doing everything right. And they had put systems in place to do things right. But the mistake they made was they said, hey, when you're going from this building to this building, you won't get paid. The government says that's incorrect. Right.
Right. So maybe marketing through kind of scare tactics.
Well, yeah, I try not to use that because that's fear emotion. But if I'm trying to illustrate an example, that's an example I would give. But I don't like the fear emotion, selling through the fear emotion. Yeah.
And fear does not always move people to buy, and fear is not always appropriate depending on what you're selling.
Right.
So in that instance, you could elaborate on that, you know, initial insight a little bit more around, you know, are compliance concerns keeping you up at night? Laws continue to change, and it's difficult to stay ahead of, it's difficult to stay up to date, let alone ahead of the game. We can help you reduce your stress and avoid costly mistakes by product and service.
So, Kristen, I'm going to say thank you very much. I'm going to change my website immediately.
That sounded absolutely amazing.
It was great. Yeah, but I see what you're saying in terms of really tapping into the insight and really used emotional language, but it didn't sound like emotional language as you were saying it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the point you're making.
Who wants to be stressed? Who wants to be sued? Who wants their reputation to be harmed? Who wants to spend $900,000? Who wants to potentially go out of business because of something that, you know, they could have taken care of with that ounce of prevention? Right. So it absolutely is, you know, it does relate to emotions, maybe not overtly, but it definitely drives decision making.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what if you have a product or service that doesn't solve a problem? And like, for example, my company, Bar Candy, it's, you know, chocolate edible glasses and, you know, it's for weddings and events and, you know, they make
luxury
people happy.
Product.
Yeah. It's a luxury product. So what about products like mine and say, you know, designer handbags and clothes and just like pretty things.
Yeah. So it's interesting, Lisa. I mean, Liz, I'm sorry, because every product or service who has any staying power is actually solving a problem. So when you think about, for example, the Bar Candy as something that is given at a wedding reception, for example. So what's typically given is a cake, right? So what are the benefits of seeing these beautiful edible chocolate straws or, you know, edible chocolates inside of a little cocktail glass? It brings surprise. It brings delight. It is something that their guest will probably talk about, and it will reflect positively on the experience of that wedding reception. So for luxury items like designer handbags or, you know, these designer chocolates that are very, very unique and beautiful, they are absolutely solving a problem. And generally, it's more emotion. It's more about prestige. It's about what people will say and think about you. And it absolutely reflects on your clients in a positive light. So there are benefits. There are benefits. You just have to search a little bit harder for what they are and how to articulate it in a way. The beautiful thing about your products is that seeing is believing, right? So you have, you have a great benefit in that people can see it. And then there are specific, I would imagine, you can customize, you know, the type of chocolate, you can customize, you know, the type of fruit that you use, the shape, the colors, et cetera. Those are all reasons to believe of how your unique product will, you know, and I don't know the, I can't come up with right on the, you know, top of my head, but your unique product will leave an impressionable memory that people will talk about for weeks and months to come.
Right. Yeah. And that's so funny and interesting because in some of my marketing, that's exactly what I say, because the chocolate edible glasses are something that most people have never seen before. I mean, I have 2 patents on them. And so, you know, in some of my marketing materials, I'll say leave a lasting impression and listen as your guest, you know, will continue talking about this for days after your wedding or event, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm understanding what you're saying there. Yeah. And
I was going to say, you can actually contrast it with what are the things that, just using this example, what are the favors that are pretty traditional? You know, like a little bag of candy or, you know, there are other things that, or a little votive candle or something like that. Well, that's nice, but it doesn't bring that delight factor. So even in
the time kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you can compare and contrast, and that's what I mean by your competitive set. Your customers are doing something today to solve their problem. They may not have discovered these edible, you know, chocolate glasses yet. So you can also compare and contrast what's missing from the offerings and what they're doing today.
Right, right. And so in terms of, say, luxury cars, luxury handbags, so again, what is it? Is the problem that they're solving kind of like low self-esteem in a way?
I was actually going to say like something slightly different. I was going to say, I mean, is it about wanting to be in the in crowd, wanting to be able to kind of show success? And I suspect that for some people that might be the case.
Yeah.
Like, you know, do you tap into a little bit of envy? Because we're talking about emotion. So what are you tapping into there?
Yeah.
When you're talking about that kind of stuff for luxury?
It could be a wide variety. It certainly oftentimes has to do with prestige. Mm-hmm. I've had the benefit of traveling globally, and one of the places that I've been to is Japan, as well as China. And in both of those marketplaces, luxury brands are the thing. So last year, my husband and I were able to take a European cruise. And the one thing that I wanted to do on our cruise was go to the Gucci outlet.
Hell yeah.
I'd be there.
We dissed all of the folks that we traveled with while they were in Florence, and we went to the luxury designer outlet. So while we were there, I waited in line about 30 minutes to get in. And it was mostly Asian consumers and customers who were there. Because I know in Japan and China, and probably other places in the world, but in those places in particular, those luxury brands absolutely have to do with your self-worth and with the perception and how people look at you. So prestige is definitely a benefit. Another benefit is performance. So I think about automobiles, and there are cars now that, you know, it costs as much as a house. Okay. So there are certainly performance has something to do with it. Prestige, again, can have something to do with it. So there certainly there may be some people who, you know, envy may drive them, but there may be other factors that just relate to their lifestyle or how they want to be perceived by others.
Yeah, I hear the words in my head are set yourself apart. Like those three words are in my head as you're talking. Like that's the language I would use. Like that's the language I'm drawn to. It's like setting myself apart. So if I want to be different, and that would appeal to me in that way, that's how I would want to buy it. Because, you know, that's why I would want to buy something expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. But the other thing too, I mean, I've always liked designer stuff and I used to model in Japan. And so I spent a lot of time there. So I know what you're saying, Kristen, but like my argument to my husband is always this, well, it's better made.
And that's
like the leather jacket I want is $950. I don't want the one for $85 because it's better made.
That's what we tell ourselves, right?
That's what you tell your husbands.
Yeah.
And you know, here's the other thing is experience. So think about the experience you have when you walk into a Gucci or a Louis Vuitton store.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
You know, a high-end store. There's a different type of engagement that the associates have with you. And so... Yeah. People are also looking for an experience. You're not going to get that same experience walking into DSW to buy shoes, you know?
That's 100% correct. Like my husband bought me a Ferragamo bag, you know, a couple of years ago for my birthday. We went into the shop and would you like a glass of champagne? There's nobody there. And, you know, we got full attention. And, you know, then the associate would say things like, oh, well, how about these shoes to match the bag? And you're thinking, yeah, I want to keep sitting here. I love how I'm being treated.
How I'm feeling.
And so that is so true. And then the second thing I want to say about that is I used to run the door of a nightclub here in New York, and people would spend literally thousands of dollars on bottle service just so that they could experience feeling that sense of great service, importance, people looking at them, getting to the front of the line, sitting in the VIP section, even though, of course, you can go buy that bottle for whatever, $42 at the liquor store, they're spending $485 on a bottle. So pretty girl can dance and have a sparkler and pour their first round. And it has always been so remarkable to me how people will really want that service.
Yeah.
And I get it. Yeah.
They feel special. Yeah. That's amazing. Oh my goodness. I feel like that's so many good nuggets there. So, all right. So really it's sitting down and hearing from your clients. So it sounds to me like you're saying, look, we got to ask them the people who we think we want to sell to, we have to have these conversations. And I think that's where you started out, right, Kristen?
Absolutely.
All right. So how do we do that? How do we go about that? What are ways that we can do it? If we, you know, one, of course, is to hire you, but the opposite, what if we can't hire you because, you know, you're expensive because you're going to give us a great experience.
She has a course though.
I do. So I have offerings at every level, even offerings that you could do it yourself with an online course. And the good thing is I really believe in empowering my clients. So I have tools that you can use, dozens of tools, including things like a discussion guide. So some of the questions, the open-ended questions I mentioned earlier, I'm reading that directly from the discussion guide that I provide to my clients. And so it really is asking them those open-ended questions about your problems and pain points, your needs and desires, motivations, habits and practices, you know, the competition. Then it's really important to ask about barriers and obstacles. So for example, what's holding you back from reaching your goal? And how will your life be different once you've solved this problem? Because then you can get into how you can solve the problem and what the benefits are you can provide. So getting back to your earlier example, Lisa, you know, if you can reduce stress, if you can minimize expense, if you can increase predictability, why wouldn't they hire you, right? So start with the open-ended questions, do your audit of the competition, and then my third module is positioning. So that's where it comes to writing your specific concept with the tools and the framework that I provided earlier, the insight, the benefits, and the reason to believe. And then it's important to test that. So we talked earlier about qualitative, which is having conversations. Quantitative is a survey. So there are so many free survey tools. I really like Survey Planet. You can use Google Forms. There are a lot of different tools that are free and are low cost. So you want to share that in a written form, that short product or service concept, and you want to get feedback from as many people as you can. I would say at least 50 people.
Wow.
So that you can validate. What you don't want an echo chamber. You don't want your friends saying it's great, but one, they're not part of your target audience, and two, they, you know, don't have the courage to tell you the truth, to give you both a positive.
You know, this really does suck.
So true.
Right. Well, so I have a quick question. Where am I finding all these people? And when am I having these conversations? Because listen, I'm a few years into my business. Liz is 10 years into Bar Candy. Where do I now go get that data, depending on the stage of my business at this point, right?
Yeah. So everything that I've talked about has to do with if you're on the front end of introducing a new product or service. If you are more established, there are still the same methodology around qualitative research, whether it's a one-on-one conversation or group dialogue. You can use those same methodologies, the surveys that I mentioned. As an established business owner, you have the benefit of having had customers that you can talk to. So one thing that I recommend, and you can hire a virtual assistant or you can hire someone even on the cheap to facilitate this for you, is to have them reach out to your customers and ask if they would be willing to spend, you know, 20 minutes talking to you and answering a few questions. It's always great if you can provide an incentive to them, whether that incentive is, you know, a Starbucks gift card or a little piece of change, or whether it's a discount to a product or service that you have, or whether it's, you know, some type of freebie that you give to them. But I do suggest, if you're established, to consider if you don't feel comfortable doing it yourself, or if you really want to make sure that you get the most honest feedback possible, is to, you know, get somebody to do that work for you so that they can compile it for you. It's always great if you can hear it directly from your customers, and or your target audience, because it will resonate even deeper into even their tone of voice, you know, how they're expressing things, the emotion, and the intonation in which they talk, et cetera. So you can ask some of these same questions around, you know, how was their experience? And, you know, would they recommend you to a friend or a colleague? You know, what was successful? What worked for them? What could have been better? Mm-hmm. So I always believe in feedback. And every time I end with a client, I send a follow-up survey so that I can get their feedback anonymously, or they are welcome to certainly include a testimonial and their name if they want that to be publicized.
Yeah, so that's actually interesting, because in that feedback or feedback survey, that's something I actually do. I do send that out. I find that I don't get the questions answered the way I want or I would like. I don't get nearly enough information. So there might be something wrong with my questions. But the ones that I have gotten that have worked for me, I've turned them into sort of case studies as well as I can, right? Because a lot of times with what I do with HR, it's ongoing work. So there's never really any stopping point. Sometimes it's project-based, but a lot of times it's ongoing. So it gets a little weird to build out a case study or something like that.
Right.
But yes, it's something I do. And I agree with you on that. Getting that information really does help, because you have that data. You can build in qualitative and quantitative information into a case study, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And do you find that people are open and willing to do that with the surveys?
Absolutely. People are generally more willing and more readily say yes to a conversation than they do to surveys. A lot of times survey responses, the average response rate for my clients, for example, doing 360 responses is about 40%, 40 to 50%. And it's not that people are unwilling to complete a survey. There are just so many competing priorities and time is limited. So I find a greater likelihood of people saying yes is when you have a conversation. And when you when it's time bound, when you say, you know what, can you give me 15 minutes and you're very focused. One of the other things I really suggest doing is to record the calls, obviously with their permission, but it's difficult to facilitate a conversation, to listen deeply, and to capture all of the great nuggets and taking notes at the same time. It's virtually impossible. So I love to use a service called Temi, T-E-M-I, and I record calls. Sometimes I use free conference call or Skype or other things. You can record calls there, but then I get it transcribed on Temi, and it's like pennies on the dollar. It's so cheap and it's such a good way to leverage my time so that I can be fully present, listening in the conversation, and then capture all of the replay and the transcribed notes afterwards.
Wow, that's brilliant. I love that.
Yes, I love that tip. I love that too.
Yeah, I love that tip. I mean, obviously, if you're using Zoom, like everybody's using Zoom, you can do that as well because you can record on Zoom and on, and they have transcription services as well. But we'll make sure we include Temi in the show notes as well for people who might be interested in that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So if anybody is interested in partnering with me or hiring me, if you are at the front end of either establishing your business or identifying new products or services for your existing business, the Brand Positioning Blueprint Bootcamp is perfect for you. Because what I found is that, and you ladies have defied the odds, the average business, about 25% of businesses fail after the first year, and less than 50% make it past year five. So you have defied the odds. And what I like to do with the Brand Positioning Blueprint is I help people to do this work on the front end to confirm that there really is an unmet need that their product or service can solve. So you don't waste your time and money and get frustrated and feel like a failure and all of these other things that happen, you know, when you hit that brick wall. So would love to be able to help you there. And certainly we provide market research services for many companies of different sizes and stature. So would love to connect with you there on DrivenToSucceedLLC.com.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you for sharing that. And by the way, just to go back to your compliment to us, thank you. And
thank
for my part, I would say that's called sheer stubbornness. So.
Wow. Well, this has just been so wonderful. Thank you so much for being our badass of the week, Kristen.
It has been my pleasure. I've loved talking with you, Lisa and Liz.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for us this week. Remember, you can find anything we referenced in the episode in our show notes on our website, bossybrilliantbadass.com.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. It helps us get found.
And thank you for listening. There'll be more Bossy, Brilliant, and Badass next week. So until then,
be a badass.